still going to be someone who might say, Jared, I didn't understand that. Could you say that again? Or, Jared, that's a lot. Can you please slow down while we write? And so, you know, give that a try. Does that sound like it might be helpful?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll try it out and we'll see how it goes. I'm also, since we're running a little behind, I'm not going to take a whole lot of questions right now. If there's something that's confusing to you, please raise your hand, but I'm going to try and get through some stuff so that we can get to the assignment. So I want to talk about developmentally appropriate practice, right, which we always abbreviate DAP, because developmentally appropriate practice takes a really long time to write. So we put DAP. But I want to talk about that, which is a lot of what Chapter 11 was about, right? They were saying, what do children need? And some of it is about what do two-year-olds need, what do five-year-olds need. But some of the part at the beginning is the part I like best, where it's talking about what do all children need. So I'm gonna talk about that for a minute. What do all children need? I want to think about stuff. There's a lot of differences with how children are raised, right? There's different cultures, there's different families, kids are different from each other. But I want to talk about what everybody needs. So just really quickly, and I know I said we weren't going to take many questions, but let's just brainstorm really quick and just call out a couple ideas. What do you think all children need? No big explanations, just what do all children need? Yeah.
Safe environment.
Safety.
Safety environment.
Safe environment?
Mm-hmm.
Safe environment. Yes.
Attention.
Wow. And I assume you mean people paying attention to them. Right? They don't need to pay attention.
Love.
Trust.
Okay. Yeah.
What kind of food?
Nutritious, healthy food. Yeah. What else? Yeah.
Freedom to develop her ideas and all that.
Okay, so freedom to develop ideas. I'll say ideas, maybe exploration. All right, yeah, what else?
Attachment.
Ooh, that's good. Attachment is a technical term for the relationship between the child and the caregiver, right? When a caregiver is consistently in a child's life over time, consistently meeting the child's needs, the bond that develops is called attachment. Yeah.
There are no one word describe what the children need. I the most close is good nutrition, good values.
Values.
Education.
Yeah.
Encouragement.
To be good connection with the society, especially with the family.
Connections with family and society. Okay. I know there's a lot more ideas out there, and we could brainstorm about this all night. But I want to get to some stuff. So there's a lot of great ideas here. But the list gets very long, right?
Mm-hmm.
Turn off your phone. The list can get very long, and I want to think about there's a lot of things that are good for kids, right? There's many things that are, that make kids do well. But I want to think about what do they really need? What do we focus on? I was thinking a lot about it. I'm going to give you some of the things that I think, and then we can respond. I think there's a couple of things. I'm going to pretend these are still there in your mind, but I need more room to write. To me, things come down to a couple of things. One that a lot of these were about, they need their physical needs met, right?
Yes.
Right, so physical needs are, we mentioned food, we mentioned physical safety, Nobody said sleep, but I'm sure someone was about to say sleep. So those are like, you know, your body needs those to function. And I'll put up sleep, food,
safety,
what?
Clothing,
yeah, warmth, all those immediate physical needs. But I want to put something else in your brain too for physical needs, which is movement and sensory experiences. And I put those, you know, those are kind of in a little bit of a different category from these, right? These are the ones that if a child doesn't get food, the child will die, right? If a child doesn't move, the child's not going to die. But I'm putting movement up there under what children need, because if children don't move, their brains don't develop right. Their bodies have to move. And for sensory experiences, right, so I'm talking about touching things, tasting things, seeing things, hearing things, smelling things, all those. But really, especially touch and movement, your brain does not develop right if you don't get those. Has anyone heard about the orphanages in Hungary?
Yeah.
This was, a couple people have. This was 30 years ago, maybe. They found some orphanages in Hungary with young children that were, there were huge orphanages, there were many, many children, and nobody ever interacted with them. Nobody spoke to them, nobody touched them. These physical needs were met. Okay? They were fed, they were in a safe environment, they had clothing, they could sleep, but everybody had their own crib, they never were allowed out of their cribs. Nobody talked to them, nobody smiled at them. If they moved around too much, they would tie them to their cribs so they couldn't get out. Right, so horrible, right? But the interesting thing was, after these children were rescued from this terrible place, and brought, many of them were adopted by families in the United States and other places in the world, children who didn't have opportunities to move and opportunities for sensory experiences when they were very young never developed normally. Even children who were only there till they were one, they were still babies, and they got them out. But children need to move their bodies. That's how brains work for young children. Your brain learns things when you're very small by touching them, by moving them, by moving your body, by seeing what happens when you bang something and saying, oh, clearly that's my foot. I made that happen. Your brain needs movement and it needs sensory.
But it's not socialization.
No, so I'm getting to socialization next.
Because the human being is social.
Can you hold on to that for 1 second? I'm going to come to that in 3 minutes. But you're absolutely right. Yeah, Julio and then Chile.
What you say now is the more important what the baby needs. You know, we are talking about babies.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about babies and children.
But this is very important. You know, the movement, because in the future, when the baby grows to child, they give you, you know, all the consistency in their muscles for everything, for their neck, even for the muscles in their eyes to pay attention and retain. Mm-hmm. And the sensation when they can get it, you know, from the early child, mm-hmm. is very important, you know, because the neuron in their brain.
Exactly.
Developing maybe 1,000 times more than a type baby.
Yeah, so you're, again, like, these are the needs that if you don't get them, you'll die, but these are the needs that if you don't get them, your brain will not work right. Sheila was going to say something and then move on.
The brief meaning for the sensory experience?
Yes, so your senses are sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch. There are, you don't have to write this down, we'll talk about it more another time, but in case you're curious, there's actually two more senses. There's what's called the proprioceptive sense, which tells your butt, which, you know, you can close your eyes and you still know whether your arm is straight or your arm is bent. Because you have the proprioceptive sense that tells your body where it is. And there's something called the vestibular sense that tells you that, you know, in your inner ear, it tells you how well you're balanced and if you're moving or not. So you can close your eyes and you know if you're standing up straight or falling over. That's the vestibular sense. And those are really important too. But mostly we're talking about touching things, seeing things, hearing things. Those are all sensory experiences. What you receive from the world. That's a really good question. Okay, so I want to move on from physical needs. Children need their physical needs to be met. I'm going to pause for 1 second and check in with Andrea. So how are the notes going, and how do you guys feel about knowing what to write down and what not to write down?
Did you say something about the sensory? Mm-hmm. Would you write the word when you close your eyes?
Yeah, so I'll put those words down, though they're not important for now. So proprioception is your sense of your body and how your body is laid out. And vestibular sense is your sense of how your body is moving, whether you're balanced or not. But you don't have to know this. Yeah.
What about is the fight or flight sense, is that sensory like?
I'm going to save that because I want to make sure we have enough time on there. We're just doing a brief overview right now. So, but no, it's a really good question, and like your sense of threat. Well, actually, that ties into the next thing. But I just want to make sure. So, is this helping to see what Andrea's writing down and to think, okay, that's the big point here? I also, I try and write down some of my big points, but I also write down a lot of other stuff that you may or may not want to write down. Thinking about, so the big point here is we're talking about what all children need, and I've always really said one thing so far, which is that children need their physical needs met. And I talked about a lot of other stuff, but that's the big takeaway idea. All right, I'm gonna move on to the next thing that I want to put up there as a need. So somebody mentioned the word attachment before, which is a really good thing to talk about. And kind of what attachment means for a child is that their needs are met consistently.
The attachment happens for the relationship with another person.
Right.
If we don't have a relationship, we don't have attachment. That's why it is my child or not you, right?
Yeah. So that's exactly what I'm going to say. So a child has all these needs, right? They're hungry. They need to be fed. They're scared. They need to be comforted. They're cold. They need a blanket. And even when they're older, all those physical needs that we just talked about are there. Those needs need to be met consistently. And the word consistently means happens every time. If there's a child who, when they're hungry, sometimes they get fed, but sometimes they don't. Or this happens to kids with caregivers who aren't attentive. Somebody else mentioned children need attention, I think we said. Yeah. Children need attention, and they need consistency. They need to learn that every time they cry, someone's going to be there to know what's wrong and to fix it. And that experience of having their needs met consistently by a caregiver leads to, as Lorena was saying, an attachment relationship. So attachment is the outcome of it. Attachment is the relationship a child forms when the caregiver is doing this, when the caregiver is there every time. And when I say learns, it's not something they can talk about. We're still talking about babies here. But their brain learns the world is okay. I can calm down. When I'm hungry, somebody has that taken care of. When I'm scared, somebody has that taken care of. When my diaper's dirty, somebody has that taken care of. They form an attachment relationship. It's like trust, right? Attachment is kind of the brain version of trust. And that, again, I'm putting this under what children need. This is not something that's nice for kids to have.
Would be confidence?
I'm sorry?
Confidence?
Yeah, confidence is related, but it's a little, confidence I feel like is when an adult is like, I know it, I'm not worried. For children, it's much more, it's way back in the back of your brain, in the animal part of your brain, that learns about the world. Do I always have to be worried about food? Or am I going to calm down because that's okay? Do I always have to be worried because anything could happen and maybe my mom's here, maybe it's not? As Andrew was saying, the fight or flight response. If the child learns from the world, right, if the caregiver isn't there all the time, or sometimes the child cries and they just ignore it and say, I'll stop crying in a minute.
Yeah.
What the child learns is, the world is not a safe place for me. I need to be on guard all the time because maybe I'm not getting fed. Maybe something scary is going to happen and I'm going to have to deal with it myself. If needs aren't met consistently, they're constantly in a mode like this. And they can't learn. Your brain doesn't learn when you're like that. When needs are met consistently, every time you cry, somebody comes to comfort you and make it better. You form these attachment relationships, and that lets your brain say, ah, okay, I'm ready. I can face the world. And that leads to what, I'm sorry, tell me your name?
Roberto
was going for next, and which I'm coming back to now. What comes after that is social relationships. When a child has learned through experience that my needs are met, it's okay, I can calm down, I can interact with the world, this is the next thing. And really, this is kind of where all that stuff was going. Because you need your physical needs met to survive, to make your brain work. You need this consistency and attachment to make your brain work. But what it's all kind of leading up to is social relationships. Your brain is born ready to interact with people. Children's eyes automatically look for faces. You can have a drawing of a, you know, you can have a drawing like this and a drawing like this, right? Which, if you didn't know anything about the world, these two drawings look the same to you. It's a curved line and two dots. But babies look, if you put those next to each other, babies look at that one automatically. Because you're, yeah. It's a, like, they, and I'm talking about an hour out of the womb. If their eyes are open, their head automatically turns to that.
I've seen a study on that. It was really neat.
It's unbelievable. And more than, I mean, it's more than that. You can see, I think it's even in a later chapter of this book, babies like a day old can imitate your face. I've seen it, I have a video of it. Dr. T. Barry Brazelton is this amazing pediatrician. He has this one day old baby in his hand, a little head right there, and the little thing, and he says, hello, baby, can you stick out your tongue, baby? And the baby's there going, one day old baby, can't do anything, but goes, yeah, and you see the mother standing right there, and she says, oh my God. And he says, why did you say that? She said, well, I didn't know he could do that. I didn't even know he could see your face. And he says, yeah, because babies are hardwired, it's in their brain from birth, to pay attention to people and to be a social animal, to interact with other people. All of our learning is about other people and interactions. And that's what it comes out. So you need social relationships. If you don't have the first stuff, if you don't have an attachment relationship, if you don't have your physical needs met, you're not going to be good at social relationships. But you need the social relationships. Or again, your brain is not good at learning if you don't get this, right? And through social relationships, and I'm talking about other children, other caregivers, you know, all kinds of just interacting with other people is the next big thing.
For social relationship, give me a simple example. I can write it down because you couldn't
ask. Yeah. So examples of social relationships are parents, other kids, yep, caregivers, really any other people in the world that are around are social relationships. And you need a lot of different kinds of social relationships, right? You need someone who's, you know, mom or dad or caregiver and is the one, you know, taking care of you. And you also need someone that you only meet once, and you need other kids, and you need, you know, your brain is made to interact with other people and to find out about other people. So you need all kinds of people, and your brain is built for social interactions, right? And I think that's what Roberto was getting at, is that this is a crucial need for children, yeah? Did you have something else you wanted to say about it?
No, but the information, the smile, came from the gene. The gene.
The what?
The gene. The
genes.
Genes. Yeah. Yeah.
Because why another face? The children don't have a connection because they have the genes.
Yeah, but it's in our biology. You come out, you're born with your brain, you know, your genes and your biology makes your brain, and your brain comes out, but it's not like, right? Okay, so let me give another example. A horse is born and it can gallop 10 minutes later, and it can eat, and it can walk, and it can sleep, and it can look for food, and it can go up to other horses and smell them and do whatever horses do. A horse comes out ready to go because its brain is programmed to be a horse, and it just knows how to do it. And once it stretches its legs, it's ready to go. Humans are not like that at all, right? For the first couple of years, we're pretty useless. We can't feed ourselves. We can't go to the bathroom by ourselves. If we get too cold, we could just die. We need someone else to put a blanket on us. Your brain comes out unfinished, right? A horse's brain comes out, it's done, it's ready. Your brain comes out unfinished. But the strength of that is your brain comes out ready to learn about people and about social relationships. And whatever culture you're in, whatever situation you're in, your brain is ready to soak it up. Because horses can't live anywhere. If a horse is born in Alaska, it's too bad, that horse is gonna die. If a person's born in Alaska, it can learn about how to live in Alaska and be ready to go, or in the desert, or in an underwater submarine, or anywhere else. Your brain is built to make you adaptable to whatever situation you're in. So it comes out ready to learn. A horse doesn't come out ready to learn, it comes out ready to be a horse. Your brain comes out ready to learn, and the way you learn is from other people.
Is the big takeaway message here.
You need social interactions with other human beings. That's how you learn. I'm going to make one last addition to this list of what children need, right? So we've got children need their physical needs met. They need consistency. They need social relationships. And that's what I'll put up here. And this is something people always forget.
Rules?
Play. And the way you know they need play is because if you try to stop them from playing, they play anyway, right? I had someone in my class last night. We were talking about this, and she said, "Oh, when I was a kid, my parents would try and punish me by sending me to my room where I couldn't play. But I would just play by myself. I would tell myself stories and make up things. And then when they found out, they would send me to my room, but I would play. They'd say, okay, the room's not punishment enough. You have to go stand in the corner and face the wall." And she would stand there, but there were these little dots in the wall, and she would stand there making up stories about the little dots in the wall. And they were like, she plays no matter what we do. And that's really true of kids. They are built to play. And by play, I mean, play is anything you're doing because you want to, not because you have to, right? And babies play by waving their arms around and putting things in their mouths. And toddlers play by running until they crash into something and fall down, and then they get up and they run, that's how toddlers play. And preschool kids play with other kids and they play with toys, and it gets more and more complicated as you go up. But your brain is built for play, and your brain learns through play. And there's just no way around it. Kids have to play. They don't necessarily have to play all the time, but just like you don't need social relationships all the time. When you're a kid, you can be by yourself some of the time, but you need social relationships sometimes. You don't need to play all the time, but you have to play. Kids have to play, and they learn best when they play a lot. So I'm gonna move to wrap this up so we can talk about the assignment. But what I want to put out there is how much that leaves open. Right? If there's those four big things kids need, they need their physical needs met, they need consistency, they need social interactions, they need to play. But that doesn't say anything about how many parents a kid should have, what kind of food a kid should eat, what age a child should go to school, how many siblings a child should have, what kind of house they should live in, whether they should, whether you should be worried about if they eat too much or eat too little. All that, to me, really doesn't count for what does a child need. That's stuff that there's a lot of that's about culture. Right? Different families think different things, different people from different countries think different things. We have different expectations and values for kids. All families are different, and different kids need different stuff. Some kids like to play with their whole body all the time. Some kids like to play by reading a book. Some kids like social relationships with lots of people all the time. Some kids like to know just a few people. But these things are consistent for all children. They look different, different times, different cultures, different places. So there's a lot of right ways to raise a child, right? There's not just one right way to teach a kid. There's not one right way to raise a child. There's a lot of stuff. And a thing that can be dangerous a little bit when you're a parent, right? When you're a parent and everybody's trying to tell you what you should do with your kids, and there's so many books that say, here's how you have to discipline, here's how you have to feed them, here's what to know about school, right? And it feels like you have to do everything right. And then you can be in a class like this, and we're learning how to teach kids, and there's so much to know, and you feel like you have to do everything right. But a big thing to remember is it doesn't have to be perfect, and it doesn't all have to be the same. There's a lot that's wide open, and there's a lot that's good enough. There's plenty of ways to raise a child that the child will be just fine. You don't have to do everything right. You know, like, they need their needs met consistently, but you know what? If one time somebody forgets to feed them dinner, it's gonna be fine. If even a lot of times somebody forgets to feed them dinner, you know what, they're still gonna be fine. If they need social relationships, but you know, they have a very private family and they only know two or three people, they're gonna be fine. You know, it's like they may not be the happiest person in the world, but it's important for us to remember as teachers and as parents that there's a lot that's good enough. It takes something pretty bad to screw up a kid. You know, kids are flexible. They can be in a lot of different situations. They recover really well. So there's a lot that's good enough. And when you're thinking about what a child needs, you know, think about these four big things. And you know, if you're thinking about school, say, okay, well, they need to play when they're at school. They need social interactions when they're at school. But that can look like a lot of different things. So yeah, I think that's where I'm going to leave this topic for now. And we'll revisit this a lot of times. How did it go taking notes on that? Do people feel like they could write down big ideas?
Yeah.
So what do we have up here? So what do all children need? So you were erasing and writing.
So I was erasing and writing, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it turns out you can't write a whole lot on the blackboard. Okay.
Is this helping?
Yeah.
A
little bit slower than that.
I can
see it.
Slower than that. Maybe we'll do it on the other side next time. Okay. Well, thank you very much for doing that. I'm glad we had a model. So this time nobody said, Jared, that's too fast, slow down.
It's fast.
So it was a little fast? How many thought I was at least a little too fast?
If you are not taking notes, fine.
Yeah, no, I mean, taking notes is hard, and taking notes while you're listening is hard, too. And partly, it gets easier the more you do it, but partly, I really, really, please, if anybody ever says, Jared, can you stop for a second so we can write, I will say thank you so much, because I'm trying to remember. But seriously, or say, Jared, could you just say that one more time? That'd be fantastic. Yeah, Tracy.
Can you please spring the bottom one? Say there's a lot that is.
There is a lot that is good enough. She said.
It means there's a lot
that is good enough.
There's a lot that is good enough for children. You know what? I don't really have time to go back over stuff now.
That's me.
We'll come back to that idea later, but just that parenting doesn't have to be perfect. Teaching doesn't have to be perfect. There's a lot that's good, and it doesn't have to be exactly right. All right, we're going to shift gears for the last 25 minutes of class and talk about this upcoming assignment, observation number one. So this is coming around. So a lot of people ask, in the syllabus, it says a little about this assignment. This is where it says a lot about this assignment, so you're going to know what to do after we read this. Oh, yeah, sorry. There's two things coming around. The yellow piece of paper, don't worry about this one yet. We'll talk about that in a minute. Right now we're going to talk about the observation guidelines.
Thank you.
All right. So there's a couple changes. I'm having you guys change a lot of stuff. There's a couple changes to make on these guidelines. Before you even read it, I'm going to have you change two things. Up at the top where it says do. Right, I'll wait a second until everybody gets it. All right, up at the top, right under in that box at the top, it says assignment guidelines. That means telling you what to do. Assignment guidelines. Observation number one, teachers. That's the name of this assignment. And then it says do Tuesday, blah, 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 Wednesday, blah, blah, blah. Cross that line out. Just scribble it out so it doesn't confuse you. And write this instead. It's due Wednesday, September 21st. Wednesday, September 21st is the day you're giving it to me. Now, if you're working with Linda, she has another date that she wants it so she can read it and give you feedback. If you're working with George, he may want to see it earlier. But this is the date you're giving it to me. Then down at the bottom of the page where it said in the other box, it says total length. You can cross out three pages and 1,000 words, right? 2 pages, 700 words.
Why no? Okay. 4 pages, 2,000.
If you would like to write more, you are welcome to. Okay, so everybody got those two important changes. Great. All right. So, talking about what this assignment is, here's the idea. You are going three times this semester. You're going to go into a preschool, and you're going to watch what happens there, and you're going to write notes while you're there, and then you're going to go home and you're going to write up what happened, and you're going to turn it in. That's the whole big idea. It's going to be a little different each time. The first time, what you're looking for is, what do teachers do in a preschool, and how do they do it? So that's why it says, observation number one, teachers. You're looking at teachers this time. The kids will be there too, you don't have to ignore them, but you're watching teachers to see, what do teachers do all day? Okay? So, and when I say teacher, I mean any grown-up who works with the kids. So parents don't count, they're not paid to be there. But teachers, teachers' aides, teachers' helpers, if they're like the director of the school is there and working with the kids, I'm counting them as a teacher. Anybody who's paid to be with the kids counts as a teacher. All right? So where it says what to do, the first thing you're going to do is choose a place and time. Okay? So you need to choose a preschool to go to. It can be a daycare, it can be a preschool. I want there to be at least 4 kids there when you observe, and at least 1 teacher. There can be more than that. The kids should be, and all this is right in there, the kids should be between 2 and 5 years old. If there's other kids there, you know, maybe there are babies there too, that's okay. But some of the kids should be between 2 and 5 years old because that's preschool age. Yeah?
That's necessary to be the observation in the childcare or preschool?
You have to do it in a preschool or child care facility or daycare.
2 to 5 year old.
Yeah.
How long
do you
have?
1 hour?
Hold on 1 second. I want to figure out this. How long do you have to be there?
Yes.
So you're going to observe for at least 1 hour. And I am sorry, that I didn't write on here. So right on the side there. At least 1 hour. I highly recommend you go for more than an hour. The longer you stay, the more you're going to find out and the more interesting it is. But it has to be at least 1 hour.
The minimum is 1 hour?
Minimum 1 hour observation. So I'm going to come to that in 1 second, but still up here at the top where it says choose a place and time, right? So choosing the preschool you're going to. It's okay if it's a school that someone in your family goes to. If your child goes there, that's okay. Is anybody here working at a preschool? Yeah, a couple. You are?
I don't even have to go to help the teachers, like go back.
Okay, or even if you volunteer at a preschool.
Yeah,
try not to do it at a preschool that you work at, because it gets a little, you already know stuff and people know you, and it's a little harder to really watch what's going on. If you have to do it at a preschool where you work, you can, but talk to me maybe. But any of, you know, this says what schools are okay. And then you're going to choose a time to observe. And again, plan for at least an hour. Do more if you can. Yeah, now I want to take a second. Yes, Angela.
I just want to make a quick point that make sure that when you go into your center, that you let them know you're observing, you're not volunteering, because otherwise they'll put you in there to play with the kids, and what you really want to do is focus on just observing.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in 1 second. So I want to switch. Yes, Manuela.
Something else. Before you go, you have opportunity to call and ask for permission and make appointment. Some of the places they have to do that with.
Yeah. So you basically have two kinds of choices. Take out this sheet for a second. This is information about the Children's Center here on campus. Okay, so there's a preschool right here. It's a 3-minute walk from where you're sitting right now, and there's a working preschool. It's a really good preschool. The teachers are very good. The environment is very good. If you want to see what a good preschool is like, the DVC Children's Center is a good preschool. And it is set up for people to observe. A whole part of the preschool here is that they are ready for students to come in and look. So this is information about how you can do that. So I want to go over this and then we'll take questions. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to go over and then we're going to take questions. So these are the guidelines for observing. Look in the middle for a second. So the school is open 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Thursday. The boxes at the top, though, there's five different, so each box is for a room. There's an infant-toddler room, an infant-toddler room, older toddlers, and preschool. But they can't all take everybody all at once. It says on the side in each room what's the most number of people that can look at a time. So if you get there to observe and there's already two people observing in the classroom you want to go to, you have to wait till they're done. Because they don't want everybody in there bothering the kids, right? So, and it also says the top three boxes say this room closes at 12 o'clock so the kids can take a nap. So when you're thinking about when am I going to observe, if you're going to the DVC Children's Center, look at this schedule and figure out what's a good time for me. You don't have to make an appointment to go there. You just walk in the door, say, I'm in a class, I need to observe, and they say, great. But you may have to wait if the place is full. A good thing to think about is there's a lot of people in this class. And I have another section of this class too. So if you wait till the last minute to do your observation, the place might be full and you might be out of luck. So the thing I would recommend when you're thinking about when to observe, if you're doing it here, is go as soon as you can and be prepared to be a little bit flexible. You might have to sit there and wait for half an hour before you start and be ready for that. When you get there, number two, it says you check in when you get there at the front desk. Number three, you have to sign in also, so there's a little clipboard, and you put your name down, and then they have a little name tag that says observer, and you put that on your shirt so that everybody knows you're an observer. Number four says, at the DVC Children's Center, there's no place to stash your stuff, so leave it in your car or bring just what you can carry with you. Number five, this one's really important. When you're observing, it says keep a low profile. It says try to be out of the way. If you're in the classroom, find a corner that nobody's going to bump into you, find a, sit down on a chair that nobody's using, sit down on the floor, and stay out of the way. Number six is even more important. Do not become engaged in conversation with children, teachers, or observers. When you're observing, you're not doing anything but watching and listening and writing. You're not talking to anybody there. Because they're doing their thing, they're having a day, and you want to watch and figure that out. So you're going to watch quietly. If you have a question, don't ask. When you leave, you can stop at the front desk and say, I have a question, who can I ask? But you're not bothering the teachers, you're not bothering the kids. Now for some of you, a kid will come up to you and say, what are you doing?
Oh, yes.
You smile at them and you say, I'm writing right now, I can't talk. And you go back to your writing. You know, you be polite to them. Or more likely, a kid will come up to you and go, look what I can do. And you smile and you say, oh, thanks a lot, but I have to write right now. And if they're really into you, just put your head down and just don't look at them for a minute. Don't do anything. They will walk away after a minute. They really will. It's your job to not bother anyone. You are a fly on the wall. You're not affecting anything. You're not talking to anybody. You're quietly watching and you're listening. Number seven, so again, if you have a question about something you saw, ask later. You can ask me in class. You can go to the front desk after you're out of the classroom and say, I have a question, who can I ask? But don't ask the teachers, don't ask the kids. That's the stuff about observing at the DDC Children's Center. Questions about the Children's Center on campus?
What time open the center?
They're open from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., Monday through Thursday.
Do I need to write down the teacher's name?
No, there's, you know, you can, if you want, you can ask at the front desk who are the teachers in that classroom. You'll probably hear the kids call the teachers by name and you can write it down. You don't have to.
Oh, okay.
Other questions about the DVC Children's Center?
Yes. I was going to say about the assignment. Can we put any name to the children, you know, to the teachers? Yeah.
So a good thing to do, let me come back to that in 1 second. Because I want to talk about, you don't have to observe at the DVC Children's Center. You can pick any of the school. But the DVC Children's Center is ready for you guys. They know students are coming. You don't have to do anything special. If it's another school, many, many schools will let you observe, but you gotta ask. So you can pick a school where you know them already, and talk to someone who works there and say, I'm in a class about early childhood. Can I come in and observe at your school? Usually they'll say yes, but you have to ask first. You can take a school where you don't know anybody. You look in the phone book and look for a preschool, and you can call them up and say, hi, my name is Jared Green. I'm taking an early childhood education class at Diablo Valley College, and we have to observe at a preschool. Can I come observe at your school? Most of the time, they'll say yes. Some schools will say no. Some schools will say, can you have your professor write me a letter to prove you're in a class? And if they ask that, I am happy to do that. But you've got to ask first. And then when you get there, you make sure you come up and you say, hi, I'm here to observe. Where should I go? What should I do? And you stay out of the way. You are a guest with people who are doing very important stuff. So you want to be very polite. You want to, you know, be very cautious. You don't want to get in anybody's way. Yeah.
We need to do the observation during the classroom or playing?
Well, most of the schools you will be at, playing is the classroom time. Most of you will see a lot of time where they're not learning, and what we're going to talk about is why play is what they do. But when any time during the day, kids are going to be playing, they're going to be learning, they're going to be eating lunch, they're going to be going to the bathroom, they're going to be doing what kids do.
After one most circle time?
What?
For example, we can go in the circle time?
Anytime is fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it can be circle time. If you observe, so when I say it's a minimum of an hour, it's easy sometimes to go for an hour and the kids are playing outside the whole time. If you go for longer than an hour, you'll see a couple different times of day. You'll see circle time and stack time and play time And so if you can do longer than an hour, you see more stuff. So that's a good idea. But if you're there and it's you know, free choice time the whole time, that's okay.
Yeah. So every moment we should write down what teacher said, what child said.
Excellent. Going on to the next thing. So the next point, it says observe. So you're there and you're not talking to anybody, you're not interrupting anybody, and you've got your pad of paper and you've got your most comfortable pen, and you are writing down what the teachers are doing all the time. For an hour, your hand will get tired and you will be sick of writing by the time you're done, because a lot happens. You're going to write down what the teachers are doing. If there's more than one teacher, try and keep track of all of them, which is really hard. Or then you could say, well, I'm going to watch this teacher for half an hour and then this teacher for half an hour. You can do that too. Especially write down things that teachers say. If they're talking to kids, write down what they say to the kids as best you can. You won't get it perfect, but it's good to hear. How do teachers talk to kids? Think about things, especially look, if there's anything that surprises you that the teachers say, I didn't think the teacher was going to do that. That's a great thing to write down. And if there's anything that the teacher does for a long time, you say, gosh, for 30 minutes that teacher was changing diapers. If they spent a lot of time doing it, it's probably important, so write about that. You don't have to write down every single thing. The teacher changed the first diaper, then the teacher changed the second diaper, then the teacher changed, then there was a poopy diaper. You know, it doesn't have to be that much. But, you know, really pay attention. Get a lot of detail about what they're doing. Pretty much, you should be writing almost all the time. If you find yourself not writing, then you're not writing enough. If you're taking a break and just watching and you're like, well, nothing's going on, something is happening all the time. Mm-hmm. And if they're, you know, if a teacher is just reading a book for half an hour and the kids are listening, then write about how the teacher is reading the book. What are the children saying? What is the teacher saying? How is the teacher sitting? There's always more that you can write. Yeah. Does that make sense of what you're doing while you're there?
We have three observations during the semester. Mm-hmm. We have to do it in the same preschool, or we can change it for all?
Nope. In fact, if you can do a different preschool each time, that's terrific. You'll learn more. If you do the same classroom each time, that's okay too. Yeah.
We divide my observation time, and
did
not different days and different time.
I would like you to do 1 hour straight.
Yeah, 1 hour one day and another day or another 1 hour.
If you want to come back, so I'll say you should do a 1 hour chunk. But then if you want to come back again and see more, you can. But don't do like 20 minutes one day, 20 minutes the next day, 20 minutes the third day. That's a little crazy. But if you want to do 1 hour and then come back another day to see some more, you can do that if you want to. Yeah.
My name?
Hey, Trevor. Thank you. No, you should.
Can I do it half hour in the classroom and half in the playground?
You should follow the kids. So if you're in the classroom and the kids go outside, you should go with them. Follow the teachers, I mean. If you're, you know, if there's teachers a bunch of different places, you should go see all the places.
Can I write a name for the children or something?
You can write down names for the children, but we get into that idea of confidentiality, right? So when you write this up, change the names of the kids to new names. And even change the names of the teachers. This is private stuff that the parents may not want stuff known about their kids. So if you happen to say, oh yeah, that kid's name is Jared, make up a new name when you write it up. Yeah, we're here.
You say we don't have to pay attention to the kid. You say to the teacher.
For observation number one, you're paying attention especially to the teachers. You're going to notice the kids too. And a lot of what the teachers are doing is going to be doing stuff with the kids. But what you're paying attention to is what do teachers do. For observation number two, you're paying attention to what do kids do. And for number three, you're going to be paying attention to how do teachers and kids interact with each other. So it's kind of going to get to be more and more involved each time. This is hard to do. Observing is hard. So, you know, you're going to do it, and a lot of you are going to come back, and we're going to say, how did it go? And you're going to say, Oh man, that was hard. And that's okay. You expect it to be hard. If it feels hard, that doesn't mean you did something wrong. That's, you know, this is our thing. I'm going to go on for a minute because I might answer some of your questions.
Yeah.
Monday through Thursday, 8 to 2.
EBC Center is ours. All right, hold on a minute, because I know we're getting to the end here, but I got a couple more things to say. After you observe, you're going to write it up. There's a suggested outline here. This is saying what you might want to write your paper like. You don't have to do it like this, but it's a good idea to do it like this. If you have another really good idea, that's probably okay too, but this is it. These section lengths are a little bit long because they were for the wrong length at the bottom. So you're going to write an introduction, which is one paragraph long, where you're going to say where you were, why you were there, a little bit about what the school was like, how many kids, how many teachers were around, anything special you noticed. You know, the school seemed like it had a lot of energy and people were really excited to be there. Or the place was messy and it was kind of a quiet day. Just give me a little bit of a sense of it. Your observation, I'm going to go on for a second and ask at the end of this. Observations are going to be the biggest part of the paper. It says 2 pages, that's a little too long. Think a page and a half, probably. Where you're going to write down what happened. Now, this is the tricky part. You're not going to type up every single thing you took a note on. The stuff that was not very interesting or just it happened once and it didn't seem important, leave that stuff out. What you're writing up is what seemed important to you. So what did the teacher spend a lot of time doing? Teacher number one spent a lot of time reading with the kids. He read 3 books in a row, and then he talked to some kids, and then he read a couple more books. The kids seemed to really like it, and they were sitting really close together. That was something that happened a lot, you know. So talk about things that happened a lot. Mention things that surprised you. Say, you know, this teacher yelled at the children. I wasn't expecting that. You know, talk about that. You probably won't see that, but, you know, putting it out there. Anything that seemed important about what the teachers were doing, and anything that was surprising or confusing, and you're going to write what happened. And you can kind of, you know, put things together in ways that they make sense together. So you're not talking about, first the teacher read a book, then he went and he washed his hands and he said hi to a parent, then he read a book again, and he read 3 more books, and then it was snack time, and then he came back and read some more books. You can say, the teacher spent a lot of time writing books. It happened 3 different times in the day, and he read a whole lot of books. And you don't have to tell me every single thing that happened. Pick the important things. Does that make sense? Okay. And then the last part is the analysis. So this is where you say what you thought about it and how you felt about it. So with the observations, you're just saying what happened. Not your thoughts, not your opinions, just what you saw. And then at the end, for about a half a page, you're going to say, I liked the way the teachers did this. Here's why. I was confused about how the teachers did this other thing. It didn't make sense to me. Here's why I was confused. All right, so that's going to be your thoughts and your opinions. Does that sound? Yeah. that's going to be a section where I'm going to ask you to phrase things positively. If there's something you didn't like, for the sake of, you know, give the teachers the benefit of the doubt. The teachers probably know what they're doing and had a good reason for doing it that maybe you don't understand. Maybe some of the people you will see will be bad teachers, but assume that they had a good reason for it. If there was something you didn't like, say, I didn't understand why the teachers did this. Okay, and then maybe, you know, that'll be something really interesting for us to talk about. And that's what we mentioned a little last week, a strengths-based perspective. We're looking about what's good, what was exciting, what do you want to do when you're a teacher? You can say, I like the way the teachers did this. When I'm a teacher, I hope I can do that too. That's a great thing to write about. We're trying to learn from these teachers. At the very end, what I call the appendix, you're going to take the notes you took, and you're going to staple them to the back. You don't have to type them up. You don't have to change it. You don't have to spell check them. You don't have to, you know, if you wrote in your first language, if you took your notes in your first language, you know, you can just staple them on. I don't care if I can't read it. If your handwriting's terrible and I can't read it, that's okay too. I just want to see kind of the way people are taking notes so we can talk about that next time. So just staple your notes to the back. Don't worry about making them look nice. The last thing, so then if you turn the page, I wrote up a little sample of this assignment. I made this stuff up out of the teachers I know and kids I know. But here, so this is a 3-page version. You're going to write about a 2-page version. But this is kind of what it looks like. And we were talking before, what do I want out of formatting? Here it is. There's my name at the top, the name of the class, the date, the name of the assignment. Here's about the font size you should use. So if you wonder what your assignment should look like, it should look kind of like this.
You forgot section number.
I forgot the section. You're right. I don't care. Yeah. You can put the section number. You're right. Yeah, so you can read it. You don't have to write exactly what I wrote. This is just an idea of what this might look like. This would be an aid paper. Yours doesn't have to be exactly like this. There's a lot of different aid papers, but that's to get you an idea. Let me tell you, just quickly say about the homework for next week, and then if you have more questions, you can see me after. And if you want me to walk you over to the Children's Center so you can see where it is, I'll walk right there after this. Homework for tonight, you're reading chapter 1, which is a little bit harder than the previous chapter. It has a lot of information in it. It talks about the history of early childhood. It talks about different theorists, different ideas in early childhood, different kinds of jobs. It's a little bit heavier. Don't worry too much about every single detail. Try and get the big ideas, and if you don't remember names and dates and different kinds of schools, we'll get to that. Yeah. Adriana.
We need to bring that chapter 1 or chapter 11?
Chapter 11, we're done with. This is for next week. Chapter 1 is what you're reading, and I encourage you to write your reading response, your first one, this coming week. You don't have to, you get to choose, but it's a good idea. Also, remember those strategies we talked about for reading and for taking notes. Try some of those out, we'll talk about it next week. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.